moment in time. Okay. You went for a clap. I was going to go for a clap, then chickened out halfway through. So I gave you like a half-assed clap.
Yeah, man.
But we're in time.
We call that the Mike's Lessons lettuce wrap. It's when our students come in after playing and one goes for a fist bump and one goes for a high five and they just wrap each other. The hand goes around. I'm like, oh, don't do the lettuce wrap.
That's honestly one of the most nerve-wracking times of my life. Like meeting someone. Like it happened the other day. The guy who we bought the studio off, right? Cool guy.
Okay, yeah.
Very cool guy. Skater. Lived in London. So I'm walking up to him and I'm thinking, I've been in London for the last 2 years. You're cool. You're a skater. I reckon you're going to do a spud. I've got a feeling you're going to do a spud. And then I'm walking up with a fist. He doesn't spud. Doesn't spud. So I'm there going, all right, I'm going to change to the classic that. And he goes to he goes to spud. So it's just a really awkward situation. Just basically,
okay.
You should never judge anyone on what they're going to do hand-wise when you walk up to them. Basically, moral of the
story. I try to have the moment happening like well in advance. I think when I saw you at NAMM, you were about 80 yards out and I had a hand in the air to know like we are going to clasp hands and then bring it in for a hug.
Yes.
But it wasn't like a handout handshake. It was hand in the air like we're going to do this and then I'll pull you towards me.
Yes.
We'll hug. And it's like it has to be. The weird thing we have is we just had our first camp and Amber has pretty decent social anxiety. I kind of do too. I'm very, like, I have a lot of anxiety about social situations where I'm not the leader of the show. Like, if I just have to show up to someone else's event, I really do. I just kind of, I don't panic, but it's like, I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah,
but if
same.
It's my thing, I'm fine. I'm totally golden. So anyways, we have to go down to the lobby of the hotel that's in our parking lot to pick up the campers. Now, if you've been to camp before, I don't know how to not hug you. I haven't seen you in a year or 2 years or 3 years, but, or that's if you have been to camp, excuse me. If you've been to camp, I want to see you. If you haven't been to camp, it feels really weird to hug you. I've never even met you. So there's eight people. I hug the first guy, second guy, just stick out my hand. I hug the third guy, fourth, fifth, sixth guy, stick out my hand. Eighth guy, give him the hug. And it's just like, and then Amber's just like, I don't know what to do. Like these are giant men. Do I hug them?
Mate,
is it awkward?
That's
always hugging Mike's wife.
Exactly. It's like when it comes to women, this might make me sound like an idiot, but it's like, is it one kiss on the cheek or then is it two, depending on where you are? Or is it just a hug? And it's weird to shake like a woman's hand, but then like is hugging someone you don't know really unprofessional in a professional situation? It's like, I don't know what to do, mate, to be honest with you.
Bro, that was the only real redeeming factor of COVID. You
Exactly.
Give him a nod.
Yes.
Give him a nod. You know, and then all of a sudden it's like California's like, masks, schmasks. Get in there, kiss the guy on the cheek. Anyways, how are you, man? It's been way too long.
Yeah,
our voice notes were minimal because of my stupid camp, which was awesome.
I know. Yeah, thanks, campers. You really ruined my vibe last week.
Kind of ruined our friendship.
I was basically just recording voice notes to myself and listening to them. Such a loser.
If it makes you feel better, I plugged my phone into the PA and listened to your voice notes with the campers.
So yeah, mate, I'm good, mate. To be honest, nothing has really happened. I was thinking about this when before we went live. I was thinking, what can I say? What can I say I've done? I turned a year older. It was my birthday on Saturday.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Cheers, mate. It was wicked. I went out for a really nice meal and had two drinks. Honestly, mate, I can't drink anymore.
Called me the next day like you were hungover.
Mate, I can't.
Two glasses of wine.
I genuinely can't do it. It's like two glasses of alcohol just mess me up, mate. I'm just an absolute mess.
Still recovering.
So I had crisps and chocolate for breakfast the next day because it was just my birthday. That made me feel a little bit worse. But apart from that, my week has been good. I think your week has been a lot better and far more productive and inspirational. But how was your camp, your first camp back?
I just thought, like, you know what? Eddie's just kind of spinning his wheels over there in England. I'm going to try to dominate the entire landscape of the drumming community in 1 week. No, everything was good, man. The first camp was great. I got to say, I won the camp lottery as far as first camp sets the tone for the rest of the year because it's, you know, these are long weeks, long hours. It's a long season. And if the first camp is as amazing as this was because of the campers, it's all down to their personalities, then even if the next camp comes in and everybody's maybe kind of an introvert and there's not a lot of energy in the room, they want to be there, but they're just introverted people, it's okay because I have that first camp in my head of what camp is and what it can be if we all support each other and all the hippie things that I actually believe in. And so, you know, but if the first camp is just kind of for some reason a bummer, which is really rare, but I've done 101 camps now, they have happened, then it kind of sets the tone for like, and we've got 7 more of these coming up. So luckily this was like just pure heaven. And I've learned the secret to a good camp. And it's funny that it's taken 101 camps to learn it. But I used to think it was embrace the suck. That's why I have the bracelets. Then I thought it was kind of like, you know, just, I did think it was embrace the suck, which was like, if you could just admit that you can't do this, we can move forward. But when you get up on my drum set and you kind of have the, what we call the nailed it vibe, like you just train wreck and you're like, boom, nailed it. Yeah. Then it's like, well, I can't help you because you can't even recognize that was bad, you know? Mm. So I thought it was embrace the suck. That is not the, I mean, it's definitely something important for all of us, but that's not the secret. The secret to a great camp is getting the campers or any group. By the way, this has nothing to do with drum camps. This has to do with group settings of education. Mm. Getting everybody there to be more concerned with the person next to him and their success. If you can get that to happen, and just in the moments that they're playing and performing. So if I put you up on the stage in that moment, I have to be more concerned with you doing well than when I will go up in 6 minutes. Just for those couple seconds that you're on that stage, I just have to be all on board. And then as soon as you get off the stage, you turn off whatever just happened and you get on board with whoever goes up next. And we had 8 campers, and every time someone was playing, there were 7 people that weren't tapping. They weren't kind of just practicing on the side. They were focused on the person on stage, and the energy going towards them was just like, you got this, you got this, you got this. When you can get that to happen for an entire week, then it's just, I mean, it's an amazing camp. It doesn't matter how good the campers are or at the drums or how bad or any of that stuff, because that's why you're at camp. If you could do everything I'm teaching you, you came to the wrong camp. So you're there to fail. But if the room has your back, then it's amazing. And we had our youngest camper was 17, came here with his dad.
Wow.
The oldest camper is probably mid to late 50s. And we just had a little bit of everything. And it was so freaking cool, man. So
yeah, it's amazing. I bet you feel pumped now to just play the drums and practice and just keep on.
Yeah. That's another thing that was weird, is like teaching on that level and having an entire week of people asking me every little question, it kind of fired me up to want to be a lot better at this instrument.
Yeah, but
especially too, because we'd be like, okay, let's go in the lobby and I want to show you guys this Nathaniel Townsley drum solo or this Dave DiCenzo drum solo or this Dave Weckl solo. And as I'm watching it, I'm trying to get them excited about drumming, but it's actually doing it to me. I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to practice. Like, okay, I've been coasting for all of COVID. It's time.
Same.
Same.
Yeah, mate. Same. I just did a very simple thing of like taking my high tom off the other day to like inspire me to play, and I just,
so no rack tom.
So yeah, well, I just got one.
Or you just have one.
Yeah, just one up, one down, and just lowered my snare a little bit, raised my hi hats up, and it's crazy what that does. But I just need. I can't. You know, I'm so annoyed we couldn't make, well, we had to reschedule our camp just because of flipping governments and being lame. But that's what I
just got an email today from one of our patrons that sent in an audio question that we'll get to in a little bit. But the last line in his email was like, I hope you and Eddie have an amazing week this week and just crush it. And I was like, mate. Yeah, that's not happening.
Same here. I had a DM and it was like, mate, I can't wait for this. Have an amazing time in America. And I was like, yeah, don't, mate. That's a bit of a sore subject, to be honest. I've spent countless hours and minutes talking to people who I've met once to try and get some sort of loophole.
Like, is there any way you can put me in your suitcase and get me to America?
Hey, my friend. The guy who we bought the studio off, right? He's now living in LA. He flew there about 5 days ago. Anyway, he could only get through because he married someone. So I was even thinking, look, what if me and Mike, what if I ask him to marry me? Well, that would get me through.
I would, If you and I having some nuptials got the camp to be on board, what the hell?
Babe, could you imagine the content down in Vegas? Who's wearing the dress? God, me. Do you know what I mean?
Be like, oh my God. That would actually finally throw Amber and Rona into a Zoom call to be like, we have to straighten this out. The dudes have taken it too far. And then you and I be like, what? We've been close friends for a while. Yeah. It's time to get married. What's so weird about that?
We had to do it. It was the only thing.
How am I going to get him into America? Well, I was talking to a buddy of mine. Actually, I was talking to a buddy of mine. We'll just leave it at that. Asking about, you know, I'm coming over there in October to do the camp with you, with AJ and Debbie Knox Houston.
Oh, okay.
And if things don't change by October, same situation. I can get to you, but then I can't get home. Might move in with you, Rona, and Trav.
Yeah, of course. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And then my friend was saying, like, the way things are going in America with our cases and how yours are going down and ours are going up. He's like, by that time, now Eddie could probably get here, but you can't get there. They won't let Americans into the UK. And I'm like, Jesus, get your vaccinations, people. Come on.
Oh, my Lord. It is ridiculous. But I think camp is now sold out, which I'm looking forward to.
It is. That's really cool. Sold out.
Yeah,
I hope
really
you
cool.
guys have fun if I can't get in.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. Be great.
And I didn't want to tell you, but I am teaching the Mike and Eddie camp by myself and keeping all the profits.
Okay, they get here in like 2 days. That's cool. I'm just gonna find the nearest bridge.
I've got a cut out of you. I'll just put a cut out of you. All right, you ready for Guess the Time signature?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I forgot about this game.
You look like it.
Oh,
yeah, don't ever forget about it. This is a game for everyone at home to play as well. So if you want to play along, here's what we're going to do. We're going to try to figure out that bottom number first. And the reason why I chose this song is because there's something that comes up a lot where somebody says, well, how do I know? Like when I say, you know, if you can feel the pulse, the bottom number is 4. It means it's a quarter note. If you can't feel the pulse, then it's an 8 usually. Well, what happens when it is the bottom number 4, but the tempo is kind of fast? Here's the thing is, it doesn't matter about how fast it's going. Like these can be quarter notes in pop punk. One, two, three, four. That's not what it. So you can, but you can still nod your head to that. It's when you do nod your head and you're on time with the song, and then all of a sudden you're off time, no matter how fast you're nodding your head. That, because what happens is when the bottom number is 8, let's say it's 7/8, which I'm probably not going to play you a song in 7/8 now that I'm saying this. But let's say the song is in 7/8. You have these kind of equidistant snare hits. Boom, scat, doom, scat, boom, scat, doom, scat, boom, cat, 5/6, set, boom, cat, boom, cat, boom. So they give you a sense to nod your head, even if it's fast. Like I think it's called March of the Pigs by Nine Inch Nails. It's doom cat doom da goon cat doom doom cat doom da goon doom doom cat. So it's fast, but it's still in 7 and it has a hiccup to it. So I'm gonna put this on. You tell me if the bottom number is 4 or 8. And whatever you say, I will edit out and I'll replace it with the correct answer.
This is the one I struggle with. Okay, all right, let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Boom!
There we go.
Man. Yes. There we go. Man, I fully zoned out before that when I was air drumming. Like, fully zoned out.
I know.
I always do that.
And that's the thing is, like, I'm not against that because I think you would figure out the drum part very fast, and then who gives a crap what time signature it's in?
But you're really ruining
my game when you play by feel.
I keep on forgetting this is like a podcast and people can't see me. It's 5-4, 5-4. 1, 2, 3.
There you go. 5-3, 4-5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Boom. Boom. I'm wicked proud of you, buddy. So proud. All right. You ready to get into something?
Yeah, let's do it.
By the way, listeners, there is no topic this week. This week, it's just some Q&A, some listener questions from our patrons, and Eddie and I just didn't get a chance to talk very much during my camp, so it's just a chance for us to catch up, and you are more than welcome to listen in. I'll never let it happen again, buddy. I promise. We'll do a live Zoom call with the campers every morning. All right.
Yeah.
What do you call an average Joe? Do you guys call it your average punter?
Yeah, we call it. Yeah,
what average would you say, Joe. Just like the normal.
Average okay. Joe. Yeah. Average
just
Joe.
The average Joe.
Just the what average
do you think,
Joe.
And I don't. There is no answer to this. This is okay. Fully opinions. What do you think the average Joe would say if you said, who makes the best drums in the world? What are the best drums in the world? What do you think their first answer would be? And this is somebody that plays drums, but they're not a drummer. They just kind of know like a little bit about our world. Maybe they own a drum set.
I reckon a lot of people here in the UK would say Pearl because...
Pearl, wow,
yeah,
okay.
I think so because all the schools were flooded with Pearl drum kits and all the colleges were flooded with Pearl. And I think that's the logo they see and that's
the
brand they know because if they did play drums, they probably played a Pearl kit more than anything else. So I reckon a lot of people would say Pearl, you know, which is a bit of a weird
one. As a professional drummer, can you name the current Pearl drums? Just like one series.
I like this is no shade, right? I didn't know they were still a company. I legit didn't know.
Like, they are.
They were until recently when they started. I started seeing on Instagram
with Matt Halpern.
Matt Halpern. Yeah. And the vintage series that they put out. It looks like it's like a different logo. And I was like, oh,
I've never
seen
logo.
That. Yeah, I've never seen that logo before, and it was Pearl. So until recently, I didn't know they were still sort of like banging out drums.
Yeah. And I don't think that's shade because it's not, it has nothing to do with their drum craftsmanship. It has to do with a lot of companies going through that, which is getting lost in what is modern day marketing. How do we make that leap? I mean, they had decades and decades of a very simple system. Take out a full page ad every month in all the drum magazines in the world. That's all you do. There was nothing to talk about yet. And same photo, same everything. It's just, okay, we'll swap out this US drummer, you know, we'll do Vinnie Caliuta in this one and we'll do Simon Phillips in the one over in the UK.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing and it was such a simple thing. And then all of a sudden, a lot of companies didn't make, they thought, well, this, you know, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook world will go away and everything's going to be fine. And what happens when media and advertising passes you by is you miss out on learning the social norms. So when you finally do show up, you can't just go, okay, now we'll do social media. It's like, yeah, but you don't know how to do it. You missed the growing period. That's why I jumped on Clubhouse as soon as it happened. Because it's like, if this does become the next big thing, I don't want to not know how it works and look like the noob trying to figure it out. So I got to be there in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Pearl was definitely in there.
It's weird. Like, I feel like, have you ever heard of Natal? Natal?
Of course. Yeah.
I feel like they kind of like took Pearl's place here in the UK. They started being put in all the colleges and all the kind of, they like replaced that affordable like export kit. I think that's the one I played in school.
Yep. I mean, the export was, we all had that in our schools here as well.
Yeah.
And we all owned them, you know, because it was the only company when I was a kid that you could get an add-on 10-inch tom.
Yeah.
It was like, wait, $120 bucks for an add-on 10-inch?
Yeah.
I'll take that.
And they lasted forever, mate. They got so beat in school.
They're great drums.
But yeah, mate, talking about platforms, actually, it's a little bit of a sort of like going a different route.
Tangent?
It's cool.
You mean us?
There we go. I can't even say it, so that's cool. TikTok, it's becoming, I know it's obviously a huge thing, but there's just more and more people who like I talk to are just saying like, why aren't you doing it? And the more people say that, the more I'm like, shall I? But then I don't know. To me, TikTok is like it's all about just clickbait and engagement and getting as many followers as possible. And that's not what drumming is to me. Do you know what I mean? And then I think why can't I just shorten down what I'm putting on Instagram and put it on there? So it's a bit of a weird one at the minute. I'm kind of reluctant to do it for a few reasons, but I just wanted to see your opinion because I don't think we've spoken about TikTok in depth.
We haven't. No, I mean, I think that a social media platform, you should ingest it first, meaning you should be a fan of the platform first before you create your account and all that kind of stuff and start uploading. But the most important thing is, does this social media platform offer you personally any benefits that you currently don't have? And TikTok, when I see YouTube videos, I think even if it's just on how to make matcha, I think to myself, man, I think I'm going to do one of those myself, but mm-hmm. for drums. When I saw Instagram, I was like, you know what? I actually like taking pictures and I wish I had a place to share them and I don't. And I mean, this is years ago, but I was like, you know, everyone's taking pictures with their phones. I want to actually take some beautiful pictures of drums. And it gave me an outlet to do that. When I look at TikTok, I personally don't think, oh man, I wish I was giving the world 5-second drum lessons, 10-second drum lessons. Mm-hmm. It's like, I already don't like it when people, okay, this is total, this should be me and you okay. in voice notes. Okay. But I'll probably edit it out.
Okay.
It drives me nuts when I put up something on Instagram that is just like a little thing. I'm just playing drums and somebody says, thanks so much for the lesson. That pisses me off so much because it's like the fact that you think that's a lesson means that we as educators did a huge disservice and you're not willing to actually ingest info. You think that was a lesson. That was a demonstration. That wasn't a lesson. A lesson is me walking you through every aspect and showing you how this will relate to your drumming and teaching you why we're doing this and where it came from and the history and you know everything, the culture. And the fact that I played a lick and you said, thanks for the lesson. It's like, that's not the person who's commenting. It's not their fault. It's like, we went wrong somewhere. So I think TikTok represents even more of that for me. Yeah, it doesn't definitely. Mean that I wouldn't mm-hmm. do TikTok one day. It's that I wouldn't do what I'm doing on TikTok.
Yeah.
So when I look at it, I think, okay, it's another time suck. I will say this, almost every photographer I know has moved they're off of Instagram completely and they've moved to Twitter. I don't know if we talked about this last time, but
yeah, there's a proper change and a shift at the minute. Like I said earlier off the podcast, I was meeting up with a guy, a rapper who is big in the UK and to give him a pair of sneakers. And we were talking about it then and he was on TikTok and his manager and a few of his mates were just saying, Instagram is dead, mate. It's dead. It doesn't give you what you used to get from it. And it's so funny. I feel like there's definitely a shift at the minute where you're moving imagery to Twitter. And like you said, all your photography mates are. And it's just a bit of a weird one, really. I was just going to say, I agree with TikTok. I just, there's something about it that is just all about grabbing people's attention. Watch this. Give me a view. Give me that high count view. And I just not about that. I just don't like.
Well, the other thing too is, you know, TikTok does have a revenue stream service for their users, which Instagram doesn't. So I think a lot of people are really upset that like, look, I'm getting 200,000 likes on your platform and you're advertising all over it and you're not giving me any of it. You know, when my YouTube video hits 1 million views, I'm like, whoa, that's going to be a decent check this month. And it's up to me. I love situations. I can't stand salaries. I love situations where it's like, I can make as much money as I want, or I can be lazy and have nothing and bitch and moan about it.
Yeah,
but it's same. Up to me. Like I can make more money by putting in more effort. And you and I have talked about this a lot. Like it's really hard when the effort doesn't have any kind of return to it. And that's what Instagram is. There's no monetary return. And so unless you're doing brand deals, which you and I both don't really do. I mean, I have a deal with Aya and there's zero money involved. I get free matcha. Mm. And even that, I buy half of it because I'm too guilt-ridden to even ask for matcha.
Same. You know? Mate, I don't, so I'm like, we're so I'll, similar
it,
in that
they have
respect.
It at the store, I'll just go buy it.
Mate, I know. My mate, Cole Buxton, the guy who works there now. I became really good friends with him. He did our website and he's doing me a new website. He was like, yeah, I'll send you this. And I'm like, no. I'm like turning down free stuff from like one of my favorite brands because I don't want to be that guy. I'm like, what am I doing, mate?
it's such a weird thing. Like, and I don't know how to like square it with myself. You know, I just got a bunch of new bass drum beaters. And I knew going into the Shopify part of their website, I could just DM them and they would be like, oh, we'll send you a bunch if you could just shout it out. And it's like, it comes with responsibility and and you know what? If I love them, I will shout it out because I bought them. Like, mm-hmm. I think, you know, I mean, that's kind of one of those things where I'll know it's time to end my relationship with Aya as soon as I stop buying it. If I only drink it because I get it for free, then I don't know how real is the actual influencer part. It's like, well, I'm influencing people to do something that I don't actually believe in myself. And I think this really relates to drums, and we're really staying on topic, and I'm stoked about that.
Mate, I was going to say, talking real quick, going back to the camp, right? You know, you put up that story of the campers downing that shot of matcha, right?
Yeah.
Out of, was there 8 people or 10 people there?
8 people, so 9 with me.
Okay, so out of the 8 people, who liked it?
Oh, every one of them.
Okay.
Bro, all right. They were hooked. So here's what happened. Morning one, I made matcha for everybody in the morning, and I did it in front of them. Like, here's the process. Here's the ritual that I go through. And I ordered all these little shot glasses, like these paper shot glasses, and I made a batch of matcha, gave everybody some, good to go. Next day, a couple people asked, like, hey, can you make me the full thing? Because they just got a shot. And I was like, yeah, of course. Do that for a couple people. Then we go up into town and we go to Sociology, which is like one of our new coffee spots. A few people order iced matcha. Then we go over to Reset Coffee right up the street. People order some iced matcha with oat milk. And I'm like, okay, it's starting to happen. Here we go.
Listen in, Aya. The engagement and the what's the word I'm looking for? The
ROI, return on investment.
Yes, it's real. It's real.
It's real. Yeah. A legit influencer. 8 people at a time. I don't do that 8 million crap. Do 8 people. So anyway, so then like day 3, somebody comes to me at like 4 in the afternoon and said, camper says like, hey, I'm kind of running down. Could you make me a matcha? I'm like, yeah, no problem. These are full cups of matcha in a ceremonial bowl, whisk, all the whole thing.
Yeah, about 50 quid a cup.
Right around Friday, I'm like looking at my stash and I'm like, I think we've gone through about $200 worth of matcha so far. So I was like, hey, I told the campers, I'm going to have to place an order on Monday. Can we just do a shot and say thanks to Aya? Because I mean, this is my first camp since I've been drinking matcha. I've never done this. I've never made matcha for everybody every day.
Yeah.
It was a, I don't think we're going to admit that I drink matcha by camp 3. I'm going to be like, oh, I'm off that stuff because I don't want them taking my stash.
Yeah,
but no, it was great, man. Everybody was really cool with it and enjoyed it a lot and was well into listening to the reasons why I drink it and why I'm so obsessed with it. And yeah, it was good. So
amazing.
Anyways.
Back to the question. So what drum company do you think is seen as being quote unquote the best?
Bro, you're a better friend than me. If you would have asked me that question 18 minutes ago and we did 7 tangents, I would have never been able to bring it home to ask you your opinion. Thank you. Well
mate,
done.
It's like you said in the last episode, I'm like a pro podcaster now, mate.
You really are. Because I've listened to our episodes where you've asked me a question, and when I was done answering it, I went right on to the next topic instead of saying, what do you think about that? I was like, later, bro. Okay. I think still in America, the average person, age group definitely matters, but I think the average person would say DW. DW has been the benchmark of like the best drums in the world for so long that I think that the average person would say that as long as they knew something about the drum world. If they didn't know anything about the drum world, they'd say Ludwig every time. Because that's all they know is Ludwig and Zildjian, just from old school marketing, from their parents, from their grandparents. But I think a lot of people would probably say, and you're right, Pearl would probably be up there with non-drummers because they've just seen that logo so much growing up. Mm. But that led me to a different thing in the drum world, which was, I wonder who cares the most about drums. Like, who is the best drum company on a care level in existence right now? Because we would have to take, I think we would have to take the big brands out of it because unfortunately they've become so big. Let's say Tama, your drum company. they know going in they're not as good as Gretsch. They know that. And just kidding, Ian. Just kidding, bro. Okay. But Tama is Hoshino, that's Ibanez, it's a massive corporation. You can't tell me that Tama or Gretsch or Sonar or DW doesn't have like an entire board looking at numbers and like, okay, we have to get some new product because we need to sell something new. It doesn't matter that they care a ton about drums, but they don't have the freedom to only care about drums. Where if you take Bob, who's independently wealthy and he's making one kit every year, he doesn't give a crap about anything other than how can I make this the best drum set in the world? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's making one a year. And I think that probably somewhere, and I'm definitely a fanboy, so this is biased, but somewhere in that A&F world is where the greatest craftsmen live, where, of course they're trying to have a successful business, but they're not like beholden to shareholders and everything else where they have to sell a certain amount of numbers to make the company work or to appease everybody. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I wonder, you can't say who makes the best drums because at a certain level, they're all the best to whoever likes them the most. That's
it. Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah.
But when I was growing up, you knew like, well, if you want the best, you would have to get a Craviato because Johnny Craviato cares more, or a Brady drum set from Australia. Those were like the two custom high-end builders back in the day. And now we've got Ron Dinette, we've got Rami at A&F, Cherry Hill.
Sugar. Yeah, so many. What's the one?
Sugar. Sugar Percussion.
Sugar Percussion.
That's another one. Bucks County. There's quite a few. I'm looking at Doc Sweeney. But I think that level is just a whole different level of care.
Have you ever had an Orange County drums and percussion snare? Have you ever?
I had the 50 ply.
The 50.
Yeah. Do you remember that thing? It like Travis, there'd be a video of Travis taking off his head and you're like, I'm sorry, is that just a log? Did they forget to hollow it out? It's there's a coffee cup size hole in the middle and then it's like, huh, it's a fairly thick 14-inch shell.
Yeah, I had that thing, man. were they big around California? Because obviously it was Orange County.
Orange County.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was massive. It was massive. And then when they sold to Guitar Center, to GC, like it was like they went away in 2 weeks.
No.
Just gone. Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, as soon as they became Guitar Center's brand, you just knew that, well, whatever made OCDP what they were, it's just not there anymore.
Oh, man. It's got to
and
be
now
such
they're going to be made overseas.
Yeah.
It's a whole different company.
A really tough decision owning a brand like that, especially like a drum or like a cymbal company where you just think, I need the financial help to grow the distribution, the factory. Right. But is this going to be detrimental to my company?
Yeah. And I made it sound like a real negative, like GC took them over and they were gone. It's not a negative. Like that's the goal of most companies is I'm going to build this until we can get acquired and I'm going to cash out. Mm-hmm. It's just a little different in our world because we're dealing with craftsmen that don't cash out. You know, they turn down a safe job to do this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, OCDP was really big, you know, not Shine. They were here for a little minute and they were gone, but
SJC.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to see what Mike has done with this JC, which is, okay, how do we grow past it? We can't be what this is. We need capital. We need investment. And he's grown the company with outside investment, but still stayed so heavily involved. I think SJC is more SJC now than they ever have been.
May, I don't really pay attention to SJC that much. Or like that custom drum sort of thing. But I tell you what, like from looking at it from afar, he's done an amazing job, because there were really many brands like that who were just trying to do like the most quirkiest, craziest kits.
And they were all just assemblers. They got their shells from Keller. They just put them together, like custom drums. I'm like, doesn't seem like it. Like custom drums, you mean you custom assembled it for me? Do you have custom tools that I don't know about?
Custom paint job, pretty much, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly, which is fine. It's like I'll drop it off at, you know, Orange County Choppers and he can do a flame thing on my rig. But other than that, okay, I do have a question about drums for you.
Okay.
There's one drum company that has tempted me in the past when I was touring that I was really surprised about. Now, keep in mind, I'm a fan. I had a Premier Janista. I had a Premier Signia. I was a big Premier fan when I was growing up. Last time I was in the UK, I was kind of blown away. By the way, Gretsch, I'm good. You have a signature snare with me. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, you're sweet.
I was kind of blown away by the quality of British Drum Company. Are they big there? Man. Are they known?
Yeah, they're kind of blowing up, really. Kind of blowing up. It's the guy who plays drums for Kasabian. I believe. Really cool guy. Okay. There's a band called Kasabian. Do you know Kasabian? Huge in the UK.
No, you're in the UK. Nothing over there reaches here.
It's like indie laddie. They got some amazing tracks. The drummer's amazing. He's a wicked guy. And then if I'm correct, it's also owned by Al Murray, who's a comedian in the UK, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. I think so. And they're blowing up. Like, I see them everywhere.
They're good.
Yeah, they're very,
I played
very
a few
good.
at different shops, Drum Shop UK, I played probably 5 or 6 kits because I would just go into different stores on my last UK tour and they were there. And then they had like really great packaging for their little bits, you know, their little like a clutch or whatever, yeah. or a cowbell mount. I was like, huh, this is
pretty cool.
Freaking amazing, man.
And they've got their drummer from Iron Maiden now. So he's
Nico.
Yeah, he's got like this.
He got the custom kit.
He got the custom
kit.
That's
a custom kit. Yeah, he got
that is a custom
that's a legit.
Kit.
That's, by the way, as somebody that used to be on the roster at DW, if you are about to get your first drum set endorsement, you need to really pay attention to social media and know who's getting kits from the company that you're endorsed by, because there is a budget, an annual budget. And as soon as Nico gets that kit, that kit ate up 80% of the entire budget for that company for the year for artists.
Yeah.
So from that moment on, if you want a rack tom, you're looking at 60% off best case scenario. You get nothing. I remember when Neil Peart would get a new kit for a Rush tour. It was, I think they told me it was well over $100,000 because they,
what?
You know, if you look at like a DW kit and the way that DW has those great finishes, DW did that same finish for the drum riser. Like his kit was stuck on a drum riser. It went into the trailer, went out of the trailer. It never was broken down. So he'd be like, yeah, we're doing like steampunk this year. And they would do all the steampunk stuff. And yeah, the whole thing would be like $100,000. And I would call and be like, is there any way I could get like a 10-inch tom for my kit? And they're like, you can. It'll be list price. I was like, that's weird because I got a free kit last year.
Yeah. And it'll take a year and a half.
Yeah. So they're like, we have no budget left. And I'm like, is Rush going back out on tour? And like, yep. I'm like, damn it.
That's crazy.
Did Bozzio need a new kit too? They're like, yeah, we're in the red. We're in trouble.
Bozzio is the geezer with like millions of toms. Like crazy.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like you just always see people sit at his kit, like pro drummers, and they'll hit a pedal and 96 meters away, something makes a noise. And they're like, what does that pedal do?
Man,
that's
His drum kit is like the Game of Thrones throne. You know, people just sit behind it to get a picture and then they're like, cool.
Yeah. I will say this though. I did an event with him and a bunch of other artists when I was a DW artist and his kit was there on display and it was not open to the public. This was just an event for us to check out the DW performance series because it was its release. I mean, this is like 15 years ago.
Right.
And his kit was there just to be there. Like he never played it. It was no one played it. Cause he was like, well, I'd have to tune it and that would take at least 6 months. And we're like, we get it. So anyways, he sat down on like, just like a little bop kit. And I was kind of blown away. Like
really?
His pocket, it was pretty impressive. Like,
I mean, you've never been into
that stuff.
You've got to be, mate. Like
otherwise everyone's going to rip you to pieces.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, cause you are going to get that guy in the clinic back row saying, do it on a 2-piece. You're going to get that. You're going to get that guy. He's only good because he's got 50 toms.
Totally. If I had that kit, I'd be ripping.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And that's honestly like Terry sat down and played some groove and some simple stuff. And it was like, okay, that cat can play. All right.
Yeah.
We are going to get into a bunch of listener questions. So let's get started with Daniel Green.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Eddie. So I recently blew out the resonant head on my snare drum. Yeah, I know. I hit too hard. Anyway. Thought I'd ask if anything has just randomly broke for you guys, kind of like that, or, you know, maybe not like that or whatever, but just kind of had to deal with something being broken for half of a set or whatever. That might be kind of an interesting story, but anyway, love the show, appreciate all you guys do, and hey, good luck and have fun on the upcoming camp.
Oh, here we go. I knew that was coming.
Oh, come on. Yeah, as soon as he said good luck, I was like, what? What do we need luck for? The upcoming camp that isn't happening.
Good luck getting on the plane and getting through customs. Yep.
Good. Way to twist the knife into our back. Okay, so Daniel had a bottom snare blowout. Have you had bottom snare heads blow out?
Mate, that was my whole existence on this earth. Until about 10 years ago, mate. Always used to happen.
Basically like giving Travis like a needle in a room full of balloons.
Yeah, just exactly. Bah, bah, bah. Yeah, yeah. It was just like, what it was crappy stands. And then also like when my snare wires would break, I wouldn't just be like, oh, cool, let's go buy a new one. I would just sort of do the twist. Twist, twist, twist.
Yep.
Pull it straight off. And then that would
And
leave.
Then there's a needle sticking out of it.
Exactly. Exactly that. Exactly that. I was too poor, mate. I think I did a tour on about two strands once.
Oh, bro, I've done that a ton of times. Trust me. And like, I always thought like, well, there's two options. This thing that just snapped off goes up and pierces my snare head, or it stays down and I forget about it and cut my hand on it later in the show.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the only two options that can happen. At no point does that thing break off and just stay straight and get out of your way. But yeah, I mean, I would get done with the show and like we always just laughed like, dude, your snare's got dreadlocks, because I would pull the snare up and there'd be like 15 strands hanging straight down of these little twisty wires. I'm like, there's the dreaded snare.
Yeah.
So anything break on you that just like in the moment kind of messed things up and you didn't have a tech to just swap it out?
Oh, mate, thinking about it, I've never had like a kick drum head go through, luckily.
Really?
Yeah, never. I've never really had anything like happen which was too bad, to be honest. I think
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's thank God, because I had a near experience where I stood up. I used to stand up quite a lot and my pack fell out and the headphone input was just in, so it went down. You know when you like take it halfway out and it goes to one ear?
Yep.
It did that, and it was the first song of our, like, at that moment in time, our biggest headline, and it was just like the most terrifying thing. But luckily I've had no breakages, nothing really. Like touring back in the day in a punk rock band, everything is a breakage, but it's part of the thing.
Yeah,
it's just expected. But luckily, mate, nothing. Have you? Have you ever had a kick drum head go through?
I've definitely had the bass drum head beater go through, and that's one thing. It's funny. Aquarian now makes it might be even a 12 inch sticker. For if you break your bass drum head, you slap this thing on there, and
it's
12 inches, and it'll get you through the gig. So
wow, that's a good idea.
They came out a while ago. It was actually an amazing idea, but I don't know if it was marketed at the right time. But they came out with like a first aid kit for drummers. So it's like, here's all these things that will help you when something goes wrong. Anyways, but no, when you go through a bass drum head, it's game over, you know? I mean, there's nothing you can do. So I would just always wait till the next song, and then I would turn the bass drum around and I'd play on the rezzo head. That was it. That's all you can do, which doesn't sound good, by the way. but I was like, what am I mean, we're on song three. I'm not going to hit my floor tom with my other hand all night long. But I would say that's about the worst it's gotten.
Let's
move on.
Oh, sorry to butt in, but I kind of like those moments, you know? I kind of like those moments in a set, especially in LTA, when it was like, when Mike had to stay down the mic, guys, we just got to, you know, sort this problem. It would like create a sort of energy. Everyone would get relaxed. Oh, there's been a mistake or a muck up, and it made the show unique. It was never like,
100%.
Oh God, you know, this cymbal stand's fallen over.
Yeah, and especially when it has to do with like the type of music that we toured in, where it's like, yeah, that's rock. That's what happens.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's what happens when you just hit hard, you're too strong, you're too muscly, you're just, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Just like the voice note I sent you yesterday from the gym. All right, here we go. This is from Justin Mason.
Hey, Mike and Eddie, it's Justin from North Alabama. So I've been playing drums for 16 years, and I started out doing gospel. I grew up playing in church, and when my parents bought me my first drum set, they told me that it had to stay in the church. So it was always there, and I always played on Sunday mornings. But as I grew up and started listening to all different kinds of music and got exposed to all different kinds of music, I wanted to learn to play those styles of music. So throughout the years, I've been in rock bands, I've been in country bands, been in metal bands, you name it, basically. I've done sessions for all genres of music. But my question is, does that benefit me? And how does that benefit me? I mean, would it have benefited me more to focus on one genre of music instead of expanding to all these genres of music? Or does it benefit me to know different styles? I've seen so many drummers who focus on one style of music and they kill it at that style of music. And then I've seen what I do, focusing on different genres of music, different styles of music, and doing well at each style and getting calls to do each style. But are there pros and cons to both, either, none? I hope that makes sense. I really enjoy this podcast and I appreciate you guys doing it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for not wishing us luck on our drum camp.
That's thank you, mate. Appreciate that. mate, this is an interesting one, actually, because this is kind of how I feel. Like, I first started out playing rock, only rock. And then I went to college, studied other music, other genres of music. And then I started really getting into my pop and then hip hop and trap and grime and a few other genres. And now jazz, really.
Now jazz, yeah.
Yeah, and now I'm back to just sort of like, okay, yeah, this is my thing. So I would say, I think obviously practice as many genres as possible, play as many genres as possible in the practice room and study different genres and stuff like that. But I also don't think it's too much of a bad thing to just know to play what you truly love. Do you know what I mean? Like, now I'm comfortable with being like, yeah, that gig's not for me. Or like, maybe, oh, I wouldn't get picked for that gig and I'm fine with that, you know, like. And I enjoy drums more when I just like, this is who I am as a drummer and as an artist, and that's cool. And I think you do it better. I was listening to a podcast the other day about someone talking about, you know, all your really successful people in life. You know, they're not doing a million things at once, they're doing one thing and they do it really well. I think it's the same with drums. It's like, mate, play the genre and the style of drumming that you love the most, because you're always naturally going to do that better, and then do that the best that you can. But behind closed doors, take little pieces from other genres and stuff. It may sound like an obvious question, but I think sometimes, especially on Instagram, when you go on Instagram or TikTok now or YouTube or whatever, you're like, oh, you know, he's playing gospel, I need to do that. Or he's playing metal, I need to do that. But I think, mate, just do what you do and do it the best you can. I think that's my
opinion. I actually agree, man. I think that that's one thing that slowed a lot of people down, is trying to do too much. I don't think there's anything wrong with being well-rounded, and there are probably 10 different genres that my answer to you, if you said, can you do this gig? My answer would be like, I'll get us through the night.
Yeah.
Same. Like,
yeah.
Jazz is a great example. Like, at no point will you be embarrassed by having me on drums for this jazz gig. But you also aren't going to be getting asked questions like, who is that amazing jazz drummer? Did he just get here from New York? It's like, I'll get us through the night. We'll be fine. And, you know, and I think that there's nothing wrong with being well-rounded, but I agree with you when it comes to like, where should you put your focus? It's in, God, it's been the theme of this podcast since episode one. Point your compass towards joy. Whatever brings you the most joy, the rewards are on the other end of that rainbow. Not like, there's a rainbow to my left, there's a rainbow to my right, there's a rainbow ahead, double rainbow behind. And then it's like, okay, where are you going, bud?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's one that makes you happy. And if I could see a rainbow that just had shades of blue and green and get rid of all that stupid red, I'd go, dude, magenta down, purple down, red down, green up, blue up. Like, that's how I mix all my videos. I would shoot straight for that thing.
Yeah.
And the pot of gold would be massive.
Exactly.
So I think you, that made no sense.
No, I know it did.
But I think that that's the key, is like, it's okay. I mean, I'm working really hard on Brazilian stuff right now. It's not so that I can move to Brazil. It's because I actually think it's getting me closer to this thing that brings me joy, which is freedom on the instrument. And Brazilian jazz happens to be the one thing that when I hear it, I go, that's it. That's what I'm missing right there. I want that. And so as long as you know where you're headed, you're fine. But yeah, especially if you're trying to be a working drummer, it would be silly to be like, oh, I live in Sacramento and I'm the best James Brown pocket player ever. God, I hope someone calls. It's like, okay, well, that's fine, but you're going to get one gig every 6 weeks. So being well-rounded is great. And then putting, like, just like Eddie said, putting your focus on the things that make you the happiest, you will be the best at those, because those 3-hour practice sessions will feel like they went by in 5 minutes when you love the stuff that you're getting closer to. When you don't like where it's headed, but you're like, well, I got to learn the blues, those 3 hours are going to feel like 3 months.
Yeah, it's tough, mate, when you're starting out, especially in the live session world or in the studio as well, because you naturally want to do it all. And you probably can do it all. Do you know what I mean? And you sort of fight your corner and you're like, when someone says, oh, I'm after a drummer like this, you're like, you know, you feel like saying, well, I can do it. And it's like,
yeah,
you probably can, but like maybe someone can do it a little bit better. And, you know, so I think it's don't get in your own way sort of thing, you know, like it's all right to
100%.
Just be like, yeah, but this guy or girl can do it better. I'm this sort of vibe.
Yeah. I mean, just because Ash Sohn or Steve Jordan can play anything in the world, if I had the opportunity to get Travis Barker to play on my pop punk record, I'm probably not going to go out of my way to get Steve Jordan to do it. It's like, well, yeah, Steve could do it, but Travis wants to do it.
Yeah, yeah,
Steve will do it, but Travis wants to do it. So I'm going to get him. All right, next up, this is Matt. Oh, I'm going to struggle with this one. I think it's Manaici, M-A-N-I-A-C-I. Matt is he's a pretty dope drummer, and he's coming to camp pretty soon. So let's check out his question.
Mike, Eddie, Matt Maniaci here. I want to start out by saying how much I love the podcast. Look forward to it every week. So thanks, guys. Now, I have a hypothetical question for each of you. Eddie, if you were banned from Nike and you were never allowed to wear them again, what company would you switch to? And Mike, if you were banned from Canon and you were never allowed to shoot with them again, what company would you switch to? Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work.
I love questions like this, mate. I already know the answer to your one.
Well, I think he might have submitted his question a few weeks ago and we're just now getting to it.
Okay, yeah. Maybe you should change it to like, if you can't use Sony. Okay, I would wear, I think now I would wear New Balance, the dad vibe. The dad vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love a New Balance at the minute. It's just that credible, older, cooler dad. But mate, I've talking about Nike.
And
what a brand. What a brand, mate. Oh my God. Everything they do. I wish I spoke about it because I listened to the branding podcast the other day. This is what I just popped up into my head just then. I wish I spoke about Nike or Nike, however you guys say it over there. Sure. They're just geniuses. Maybe I'll bring my points up in branding too, 2.0. But yeah, my answer is New Balance, basically.
I think New Balance's designs from, I mean, God, they've been around forever, but from the 70s, 80s, 90s, moving forward, their shoes lend themselves to so many different design options without changing the shoe because they have so many parts to the shoe that it's like, and we can make this thing 40 different colors, but it's all part of the same shoe. It's a cool thing. I mean, I think that that's the new version of New Balance, like as far as new brands and great branding would be On, because they do a similar thing. On is like modern New Balances.
I read a thing on Bloomberg Business. Okay. Do you follow them on Instagram? Great page. It's just about...
Yeah, of course. I'm not going to let you outshine my business knowledge. No, I don't, all right? I will though now.
There was an article about them saying how they've taken over. They've taken over... they've had like... They're worth something billion now. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Really?
Yeah. And
they've done it the right way.
Yeah, they've done it the right... Exactly. They've done it the right way. The small touches, the nice aesthetic and not overdoing it with like clickbaity stuff and love it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like On is reaching out to cheesy influencers to be like, we'll give you this for a main fee. It's like, we're good. We've got Roger Federer. We'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I am struggling a little bit with stills. So video, I'm set. I just watched a video of Armando Ferreira breaking down the Canon C70, which is what I had, versus the Sony FX3, which is what I now have.
Right.
And that was cool because it was like, okay, here's the verdict. I mean, I look up to this guy as a filmmaker and he's pretty much pitting my old camera, which isn't old. I mean, it's brand new right now. He's pitting what I used to use to what I use now. Come on, Sony. And I think the verdict was any camera made after 2019, it's on you. They all do the same thing. It's the form factor. It's where the buttons are. I will say this. There is something, when someone hands me the Sony A7S III, which is the exact same camera that I use, except for in a different form factor, it feels so wrong to me. And then as soon as I have my Sony A7S, my Sony FX3, which is the same sensor, the same everything, same science, but in a cinema form factor, it feels like heaven. Everywhere my thumb lands, it's exactly what I thought it was going to be. I'm like, I wish white balance was here. Oh my God, I just changed the white balance. I wish this dial was the f-stop. Oh my God, my lens just opened.
But what you everything need to do I wanted- is film like reaction videos to you opening new cameras. I honestly, mate, your YouTube channel would love that. Like you unboxing a new camera and demonstrating it and showing it and geeking out like firsthand, like just off
I
the
do
cuff.
Love it. I mean, it's really fun. So I'm having to Matt's question. I'm going through some stuff with stills right now. So Sony FX3 for video. I'm stoked. I couldn't be happier. Yes, there's better things out there. I wish I had a Red Dragon. I wish I could spend 50 grand on a body and 10 grand on a battery, but I can't. So, and I've shot with Reds, or I've been, this is going to sound weird, but I've been shot on Reds and they're great, but they're not. I mean, I'm not good enough in the video world to take advantage of that being so good. So it wouldn't do me any good. So I'm happy with my video cameras. But with stills, I just did my first camp shoot with Leica, which is not meant for that. Leica is street photography. It's intimate moments. It's you know, it's got a thing to it. But I just wanted to see, I wonder what portraiture and a group shot would look like with a Leica, which, by the way, is so not meant for that stuff. Like, it doesn't have an HDMI out that you can tether to a computer or even a USB out that you can tether. Because normally when you do a photo shoot, you tether to a computer. You take the picture, everyone can come around to the laptop, see what's going on. They're like, oh, this looks amazing. And people get excited. This thing, you take a picture and then you look at this 1-inch screen. You're like, I think it's in focus. All right, let's get set, everybody.
It's like almost like film, isn't it? It's like, well, there's no point looking. Totally, we just got to get this like on the computer and see what happens.
We're just going to hope for the best. So it's not meant for it, but it came out good, but it didn't totally blow me away. And then, so then I ordered Sony's, I don't even remember. A7IX, I believe is what it's called. It's like they're one of their higher end photography cameras that can do video, but it is meant to be a portrait photography camera. Mm. It was cool. I just didn't love it. So sent that back. And then I just, it's so stupid, dude. Just rented a Hasselblad that gets here in like a week.
What is a Hasselblad?
Dude, just whatever you do, don't type it into Google. You will hate me right for now. Life. But I wanted to try out medium format. Why? Oh, so I can take pictures of my campers once every 3 weeks and post them on Instagram. It makes no sense whatsoever.
These things look like they're from the 1940s, mate.
That's what took the pictures on the moon.
So which one are you talking about? Which model is it?
The X50D2.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, sick.
But that's without lens. Then the lens, it's stupid. So I think that in the end, I'll probably end up with another Sony to take stills with. Now, my FX3 can take stills just fine. And I think that's probably what I'll do the next photo shoot with. It doesn't have an eyepiece. And that's kind of a weird thing is like, you can take all the pictures in the world, but you don't feel like a photographer unless you hold it up to your face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Like when you put it to your face, it's like, well, I'm a photographer. This is what I do.
When
you look through the back of the viewfinder, which is what the A7 S3 has that I don't have, then you kind of feel like I'm not supposed to be taking stills with this camera, even though the sensor doesn't know that. So anyways, that's where I'm at with things. Matt, thanks for launching me into all that. We could have done a full hour on Nike and Sony.
I love hearing people talk about something they're just geeking out about. I love it. Mate, these cameras look amazing. I've never heard of them before.
Yeah, so Leica is a German company, and then Hasselblad is a Swiss company. So it's like the Swiss watch world, but of cameras.
Yeah, they look smart.
I wanted to try out, so medium format, it's a much bigger sensor. Like there's full frame and there's APS-C and micro four thirds. And above all that is medium format and like legit, you know, portrait photographers like Annie Leibovitz and stuff use a Phase One or a Hasselblad, these medium format cameras. And what happens is there's like a really beautiful compression in the image that almost looks like you're shooting a movie, but with stills. And I don't mean like the look. It's really hard to explain, but when you see it, you would know like I feel something different from that image, and that's medium format. There is no reason for me to have a medium format camera with how little photography I do, and I ain't getting paid to do it. I just do it for myself. And the fact that I'm thinking about a Hasselblad so I can take a picture of my freaking Cherry Hills drum key next to a cup of matcha is just stupid, and I understand that.
It's not stupid, mate. I tell you what, you only live once, and you've got to live it. You've got to live it.
You get it. I mean, you're my brother. Mate, you get it. Like, mate, so it's
exactly.
cool.
Exactly. Mate, everyone gets it. We're drummers. We just nerd out about the most irrelevant
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Thank
and
you.
And then when
okay.
it's not drums, it's on something else, you know? It's the same.
Right. If I said this whole thing about, like, I think I'm going to buy a Craviato. You know, we're talking about 12 grand, right? And everybody would be like, dude, you should do it.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I'm thinking about getting a Hasselblad. And they're like, you're an idiot. All right. Stu Meadows has a question. Let's see if he mentions the camp.
Hey, Mike and Eddie. This is Stu from Iowa here. Hey, big fan of the podcast. Love that you guys take our questions like this, even on short notice. I've got a question regarding fan interactions. I've been lucky enough in the past to have met some of my favorite drummers and even just other people in the drum industry, like the Ron Danettes of the world. You know, people that would be super fascinating to have a conversation with, but sometimes I feel like I have so much to say that I'm left with almost nothing to say at all. So with shows and things coming back, you know, hopefully a lot of us will get the chance to meet some of our favorite drummers, sometimes even some of our heroes. You know, we obviously always want to leave a good impression. So I'm curious for you guys, what are some of your favorite fan interactions that you've ever had? Whether it be after a show, clinic, or out in public, really anywhere. Just curious to hear some of your most memorable interactions that you've had with fans, either good or bad. So hoping to hear some good stories. I appreciate everything you guys do on the podcast. I think your honesty and openness is something we need more of out there. So always appreciate hearing it every week. Thanks for taking the time, guys. Have a good one.
First of all, Stu, you have a voice for radio, bro.
Hey, I could listen to him all day. Yeah, what a legend.
That was beautiful.
That was beautiful.
I have no idea what he said. I was just zoning out on his voice.
What did he say?
Okay, so I think that what I think though that that's a he brings up a really good point. Like, we are so self-centered as far as thinking about our interaction with whatever heroes we're going to meet. We rarely think about, like, the people that made an impression on us, you know, because it's like, I'm just stoked out of my mind that you think it's neat to meet me. Like, that's just crazy. I'm a drum teacher. So, you know, I'm thinking about, like, oh man, any second now, you know, Vinny could walk out and what am I going to say to him? But as far as people that have left an impression on us, that's such a weird thing because usually your meetings are so short, you know,
and
it's like an autograph line.
And like the always the weird thing that always gets me is, you know, so much about them and they know nothing about you. Like that was right. the one thing that tripped me out. Like,
you mean when you're meeting one of your heroes?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like,
yeah. I was like, how do you know so much about your fans? I don't. I want to.
Like, you feel like, yeah, you feel like you know them so much, and they just know nothing about you. It's an interesting one, mate. I've never really like been asked that before. But some of my favorite interactions though are when someone says, like, you know, like, I don't know, ask me a question about something that is so unexpected. Like, oh, so were you, I don't know, like, I could be at an LTA show or something, and the classic questions, and then someone could be like, yeah, so I don't know, how are your arms feeling after, like, I don't know what it could be. It's just.
Yeah, yeah, just not the obvious.
Yeah, just not the obvious. Yeah, and
I mean, definitely. I mean, if somebody sees me, you know, holding a camera and they go, oh, is that the Leica Q2? It's like, well, we're off to the races. Now I'm going to talk to you for 6 hours, you know, or like, hey, what's the difference between good matcha and bad matcha? So it's like, if there's a little bit of, is there anything deeper than you like the way I teach and play drums? Because a lot of times those meetings happen after I'm done. And it's like, look, man, I put everything I had into this, but at this moment, I'm trying to empty the recycle bin of the drum world. Because I gave this everything I had. I did all the Q&A. It's over. So I need a fresh breath of, if you know that I'm a sports fan, like, ask me, like, hey, so what do you think about the Sacramento Kings this year? Or whatever it is, you know, anything other than drums, and I'm good to go. And that's the thing is, like, when we meet our heroes, we have to understand that the last thing that our hero, you know, if you meet your favorite footballer, the last thing he wants to talk about is the last goal he scored. It's like, I do that all day long. That's all I do. Live, breathe, sleep, soccer. Can we talk about anything else? And it's like, hey, I saw you on Yanomize. I saw that you just got your Land Rover Defender covered, or, you know, wrapped in matte black. I'm sure that footballer will now talk to you for an hour about that.
Yeah.
But not about soccer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's always the way when someone talks to me about sneakers, I'm like, oh, okay, okay. Let's get a drink.
Right. Yeah, like, and or if you're at a sneaker convention and somebody talks to you about drums, you know, it's like, exactly. Cool, I've been here, let's go. Let's
yeah,
go.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? I never really thought about surrounded. That. It's like yeah. Polar opposites, basically.
Basically. Yeah. So if we're at NAMM, don't come up to me and Eddie and be like, what do you think about the new DW Maglev throw-off?
Yeah.
Be like, I don't think
I'm leaving.
But I do think about matcha, so let's go find a cafe. All right, yeah. We have one more question. By the way, great question, buddy. We have one more question. This is from Steve, and he actually sent this in via text. So we've got, this is a lengthy one. Wish me the best. I'm bad at reading. Hey, Mike and Eddie, I have a question about crash cymbal orchestration, mainly in rock or pop music settings. I'm curious about how much thought and intention professional drummers with two or more crash cymbals of different sizes generally put into which crash they'll actually hit in combination and in sequence. I feel like in the moment, crash selection is often random and not always based on tonal reasoning. For example, say there's a dramatic break in a song, which the backbeat stops and the drummer hits three crashes in unison, slow or medium tempo quarter notes, bsh, 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 with three power chords on a guitar. If you have multiple sized crashes, in general, do you go smallest to largest for the three crashes or the opposite or out of sequence? I could likely be overthinking this, but I have a sense that cymbals are not just selected at random by pros. I linked a video below of Neil Peart for context. Is he winging it or is every crash cymbal hit planned out and orchestrated? Thanks for the insight you can give. For me personally, that's such a great question.
It's an amazing question.
But I've never thought like that ever. No. I just sing in my head and whatever comes out, I just know where to hit. You know, if there's a smaller one, it's to me, it's shorter notes. You know, it's really not the tone as much as it's the sustain. If I want, I'm going for my 16, which I don't have, but if I did, and if I want to last a long time, I'm going for a 20.
Mm-hmm. I've always had my left like a trashier crash, and that the left one's always smaller, and then on my right it's always bigger and it's washier. So that's just always been there. So da da da, I'd always leave my right. Da, da. I don't know. It's forced me to think about things I've never really thought about before. This question, it's kind of good, but yeah,
there's a decent chance you just ruined both of our careers because now we won't be able to stop thinking about it. Thanks a lot,
yeah,
Steve.
I know, yeah. It's a good one, but I don't think many drummers are thinking about that. I don't think they're thinking about
that
at all.
I don't think so at all.
I think they've got their setup that they have, smaller on the left, bigger on the right, or vice versa, or whatever. And they're just sort of, especially if they've got their cymbal selection or their, you know, like I play Ks, so I know how they sound. So I'm going to just automatically go for the right sounding cymbals. You know, I'm not going to hit.
Do they make the right sounding cymbals in Ks? I'm sorry, it's getting late. I can see Eddie's fading. It's like 9 p.m. where he is. I just wanted to jab him a little bit.
It is 9 p.m. Flipping hell, mate. I shouldn't have had that coffee, mate. Jeez Louise, here we go. Midnight.
Okay, so I think to wrap this up, I think that most pros, and you can tell me if you disagree, but I think most pros think in terms of sustain rather than pitch. I definitely, like, I know that Vinny's going to go for two splash cymbals because he wants pss, pss, but not because he wants the tone of those. He wants those two short notes, and his 8 and his 10 inch splashes will give him that.
Yes.
And I know that same thing for me. Like, I'm just hitting for sustain or for, you know, longer sustain or shorter sustain. My smaller cymbals, obviously, and thinner give me shorter sustain. My bigger and thicker cymbals give me longer sustain. That's basically it.
Yeah, nailed it, mate. Absolutely nailed it. I love these questions.
All right,
though.
Sign up
I really,
Patreon.
I really do think. I really do think about things that just I never have before. It's so funny.
Yeah,
it makes me feel like I'm a terrible educator because I'm just sat here going, I don't know.
I just hit whatever's in front.
I just hit things with wood.
No, I think that's the thing. That's why we're on this journey together. Is we all go through so many different things, and one thing that I think this podcast brings to the forefront, especially from our questions, is that everyone in the world is a little bit worried about doing the wrong thing. And I think we have to kind of get over that and do the thing that makes us happy. And when it's like, what should I be practicing independence? Should I be practicing hand speed? It's like, yes, all of it. But something turns you on about this instrument more than others. And the people that just loved speed, that's all they wanted to do was get faster. They're really fast and they play in metal bands and they're really good at it.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. And the people that just love the tones and the textures of the instruments, they play in singer-songwriter acts and they care about playing with like a shaker in one hand and a brush in the other hand. And so it's like, do whatever makes you happy. Point your compass towards joy and it'll all work out.
Yeah, man. Nailed it.
Bro, he's getting sleepy. Yeah, everybody, he's getting sleepy. And you're a champion for doing this at 9 p.m.,
mate,
buddy.
It's fine. It's my fault because I just drove into London early and got stuck in traffic for about 5 hours. But yeah,
We're trying to get Stan on the podcast. It'll be 3 a.m. for him.
I don't know how he's going to do that, mate. I physically don't know how he's going to do that. He's going to be shattered.
Figure it out.
I mean, he's a coffee head. He'll figure it out.
He'll be all right. Just snorting dried beans. Right, everybody, have an amazing... Yeah, what's up?
No, nothing. I was going to say, it'll be great to get Stan on because we bought a new coffee machine for the studio and I don't know how to work it. It tastes like chemicals at the minute, mate. It's absolutely disgusting. I don't know what is going on.
So you're not doing it right.
So we're going to do the podcast from there this time. Fingers crossed it won't rain. And then we can I can flip the old screen around and
that'd be awesome. We've talked way too much about matcha without giving coffee. It's just due and I'm totally open to it. So we will do that. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do us a massive favor and head on over to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie. You can find that link in the description below and please consider supporting this podcast. The reason you were able to listen to an hour and 15 minutes of two idiots babble without being interrupted by a commercial is because other people are actually paying for this podcast and they're supporting this. And we do not take that for granted whatsoever. If that's just not something that you're able to do, we fully understand that. Eddie and I have lived many decades combined as broke drummers. Please do us a favor and just go to iTunes and leave us a review and a rating. That helps other drummers find this podcast and we would appreciate that. But until then, we're coming up on 50, bro. This is episode 48.
What are we going to do for 50? Wow.
We're going to launch our new intro that we keep talking about that we haven't done anything about.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, there we go.
Woo-hoo! No more boom. No more of that, which is probably playing right now, and I probably just screwed that up. All right.
There we go.
Everyone have an amazing day. Episode 48 is in the can.
Bye-bye. There we go, mate.
There we go.